Hello, everyone. Welcome to the world's most fantastic podcast. That's right. It's Uncanny Treks does the John Hickman Fantastic Four run. We're on volume 5. You might call it forever. We're talking about issues number 600 through 604. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southlands. We are part of Uncanny Treks. Matt, how you doing tonight?
Bob, this stuff just keeps coming full circle. It's crazy. Jonathan Hickman's a damn good writer. I just give you that. We already knew this, but still, this proves it.
My man plots real tight. We're starting off with issue number 600. There's actually a multitude of stories in this 100-page 600th issue, so we'll go story by story. We'll start out with Forever, the main story, also part one of five. Matt, what's the plot of Forever, part one?
So with the Avengers trying to stop the Kree bombardment in New York and Adeline, Annihilus' cultists attempt to unleash the Annihilation Wave, but let something else out of the negative zone.
To start off, man, I want to compliment Steve Epting. He brings it in this issue. He's good through it. He does the art for this, 601 and 604, but he really brings it this issue with the widescreen panels.
All the TV screens went widescreen, Bob, so why not comics too? Just make everything widescreen.
Exactly. Man. And of course, they're about to die, so Namor never loses an opportunity to declare his love for Sue.
So Namor is psycho about Sue, and I'm catching on to this. I knew they had a thing with Fantastic Four. I think most people do. But the more I'm learning about him, he's psycho for Sue Storm. And it's creepy at this point. But is it strange that the Sue and Namor romance and relationship is the one of the things that I'm actually looking forward to in the MCU?
I feel that the MCU is too woke to get it right.
You don't think they're going to do it? Damn. I was really hoping they would.
I just don't think they're going to do it in an interesting way, to be clear.
Oh, I hope they do. That would be awesome. That would be one redeeming thing they could do, because you don't get a lot of stuff in any of the other Marvel movies.
Namor's relationship with Sue actually is interesting, and usually, at least in the modern comics, Namor is portrayed as horny for everyone. I mean, he is especially horny for Sue Storm, but he's horny for everyone, especially when Kieran Gillen and Matt Fraction are writing him. So usually modern Namor is portrayed as being pretty respectful of boundaries. He's going to declare his undying love for Sue, but he's not going to do anything worse than that or more than that.
Well, Bob, we have some other characters here that are interacting that we're not used to seeing interacting in a Fantastic Four book.
Do you like the image of a future Foundation Spider-Man modifying Iron Man's suit? It felt like a Civil War callback to me.
I need the list, Bob, of the smartest people in Marvel ranked, because I need to know how smart Spider-Man actually is compared to these other characters.
That would be a hard list, because unlike the DC universe, it feels like everybody's got a genius and a genius villain in Marvel.
Because I know someone who could just hook up with Iron Man and be like, here you go, here, Leo, let me fix some wires in the back here. Okay, now we can put a whole bubble around the entire city.
He did have a stint as Iron Spider before this.
So he knows everything about all this technology? He's got that spider-level intellect.
He's got the intellect of a spider. Did you like Thing, Red Hulk, and She-Hulk all clobbering together?
Yeah, I was good with it, but Red Hulk was never as good as Green Hulk to me.
But Red Hulk is so angry, Matt. He's so angry.
No, I hate Red Hulk.
You didn't like the 2010 comics where Red Hulk just beat up everyone in the Marvel Universe?
No, Bob, I didn't. I can't stand Red Hulk. I don't like him.
You don't think Jeff Loeb is the best comic writer of all time, Matt? Think Ed McGuinness is the best artist of all time? What?
I really don't, Bob. I hate Red Hulk.
No. Yeah, Red Hulk sucks, of course.
It was good to see She-Hulk. I always like She-Hulk. I always associate She-Hulk with the Fantastic Four, so that's a good thing to see her in these comics.
I might be wrong about this, but I feel like she was one of the earliest substitute members of the Fantastic Four. So, Matt, were you surprised that Bentley is a Fozzie Bear fan?
I mean, considering this dropped in the early 2010s, yeah.
But does the fact that Bentley is evil and worships Mephisto, does that make him more likely to be a Fozzie Bear fan? I feel like in the 2010s, I feel like perhaps.
Let's waka, waka, waka. I don't know, Bob.
Waka, 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 Matt.
Waka, 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 waka.
What's the surprise we get this at the end of the story in this issue, Matt?
Well, apparently Johnny Storm's not dead, Bob, and Annihilus is his gimp. So go figure.
Yeah, he's got Annihilus on a leash. He's bringing out the gimp, everybody. This leads us into the second story in this volume, Whatever Happened to Johnny Storm. The art in this one is by Carmine DiGiacominio, who you may know from his work on Spider-Man Noir, the miniseries, and the Magneto Holocaust miniseries, Magneto Testament. Matt, what's the plot of Whatever Happened to Johnny Storm?
God, the Magneto Holocaust series just sounds depressing.
Yeah, usually I would be of the opinion that superhero comics probably shouldn't directly deal with genocide, but I think Magneto Testament does a pretty good job. What happens in the plot to whatever happened to Johnny Storm?
So, Bob, Johnny Storm dies in the Negative Zone, only to be resurrected by Annihilus for gladiatorial combat.
Yeah.
Why else would you resurrect a fireman? Why?
You gotta enjoy the games, Matt. You gotta enjoy the games.
You gotta let him fight people.
And before the resurrection happens, we do have a great scene where Reed shows up at the gateway to the Negative Zone to demand his brother-in-law's body back from Annihilus, and he's blackmailing Annihilus with the ultimate nullifier, which is, A, it's nice to see Reed be that edgy, and then B, it's nice to see Annihilus just go total teen goth and be like, yes, please use the ultimate nullifier, I lost to death.
Yeah, Annihilus' enthusiasm for death made him seem way more sinister than I thought his character was. Because I don't know jack about Annihilus, but I was like, whoa, this dude's a little unhinged. But I want to ask you, Bob, what does the ultimate nullifier actually do? Like, is it a gun? Has he used it before?
It's a weapon of great power that could destroy large parts of the universe, if not the universe itself. I think it originally debuted in the original Galactus story, where to back Galactus off, I think the Watcher sends the Human Torch on a quest to get the ultimate nullifier, and then Reed uses it to back Galactus down.
Okay. Has he actually used it ever?
I'm sure at some point, but usually the whole point is that you don't use it.
What happened to the comic page when you use it? Did it all go blank? Was it like zero hour?
I can't remember a time when he's used it, because the point of it would be, the point is the threat, not the use, right? Yeah. I'm sure in 70 years of Marvel history it's been used at some point.
Well, I'm going to look that up, Bob, and next episode I'm going to tell you when he used the ultimate nullifier, because I want to know. So, Bob, another thing we're getting here we're getting an early taste of the resurrection protocol with the Negative Zone's disgusting way of bringing you back from the dead, which we'll see with Hickman. We're seeing a lot of the same things we saw in Krakoa. We got the resurrection here of Johnny Storm, resurrection protocols in Krakoa. Which would you rather have? Would you rather be brought back the way that Johnny's brought back with these worm stitch things, or would you rather be brought back with the five from Krakoa?
Oh, I'd definitely rather be brought back by the five. Seems way less gross to be born out of an egg. That said, I mean, I would, of course, rather be alive than dead. So, yeah, I would take the Negative Zone way, too. And it is funny that normally you associate worms with death. So it's funny, worms associated rather with resurrection.
Hickman cleaned up his resurrections with the X-Men stuff. Can't do that nasty crap anymore. Let's drop them out of eggs. They'll just hatch.
I wasn't thinking of this, but you're exactly right about the connection to Krakoa and resurrection. But there's also the amusing connection, although it's not played up as much in Krakoa, but you do have the gladiatorial arena, I believe they call it the Crucible, Krakoa, where mutants can get killed so they can be resurrected with their powers.
And you've got the Hall of Dooms and then the Hole.
My man's got his obsessions, and he keeps coming back to them, that's clear. Matt, did you have any thoughts on Johnny basically quoting the movie Gladiator?
The whole scene itself just reminded me that Johnny Storm's way more powerful. I didn't realize just how powerful these characters are. Even when he's not going Nova, he didn't have any issues taking out that dude. It was nothing to him.
It's partially that he got a power upgrade in Mark Waid's run, if I remember right, but it also does seem resurrection makes him more powerful, and certainly he gets more in the arena here.
Right. Well, Bob, while he's in the arena, he makes friends with the Light Brigade. It's this group of Universal Inhumans, and they look like some random 80s Saturday morning cartoon.
They do. I don't think these guys really come back after the Hickman run, which clearly Hickman has affection for them, but they just didn't look like they were destined to catch on.
Well, I felt like these guys were going to come back, and then they were going to be married off to Black Bolt's brides.
Johnny being really into Gladiator in 2012, 12 years after it came out, that's perfect for the character. Johnny is a guy who discovered that movie 5 years after it came out.
So, Bob, we're introduced to yet another super powerful weapon, the Cosmic Control Rod.
Yeah, this one's Annihilus's, and it's associated with the Negative Zone.
The thing we have to get now to fix things, the Cosmic Control Rod. We have the Ultimate Nullifier, now we've got the Cosmic Control Rod.
Of the two, the Ultimate Nullifier is definitely the more powerful.
Definitely more powerful than the Cosmic Control Rod.
So in our third story, Matt, it's called Black Queen. It's got art by Ming Doyle. What happens in Black Queen?
Medusa communes with Black Bolt. They talk to each other. even though Black Bolt can't talk.
It wasn't really clear the mechanism. It
reminded me of when Aquaman talks to Mira and all the other people in the Aquaman movie.
But not in Aquaman 2, because Matt hasn't seen that yet.
Well, I don't know what they do in Aquaman 2. I don't care what they do in Aquaman 2.
Preach.
Aquaman 2's dead to me.
It's a pretty solid backup story, but the main point I had from it was in the first page of it, I initially thought Medusa was using Lockjaw as a throne, and that really cracked me up.
Medusa isn't happy about the other wives, which has a right to. But Black Bolt plays it cool, and he's, oh, it wasn't my idea, but he's not exactly denouncing it. And he tells Medusa that she's his number one girl, and he can just boss the others around. He's just playing her.
Matt, are you taking notes on how to do polyamory from this? I should have said this at the outset, but I didn't. The art here is by Ming Doyle, who's a pretty fun artist. Matt, did you ever see that movie, I think it came on Netflix, The Kitchen, about the mob wives who have to take over their husbands' businesses in 70s New York when the husbands are in prison?
No, I've never seen that.
Okay, that was a Vertigo miniseries that Ming Doyle did the art for that got turned into a movie that I didn't see and got pretty mediocre reviews. Our next backup story, Matt, is Ark. The art on this one is by Lanil Yu, who you probably know. I'll just flag him here for Superman Birthright. Have you ever read that?
Oh, yeah, I've read Birthright.
Do you have any memories or opinions on it?
I was brought up on the John Barron run, the Man of Steel stuff. It was hard for me to go and read this and be, okay, now this is the accepted continuity or whatever that we're going to move with going forward. I enjoyed certain aspects of it. I feel like some of the Krypton stuff a little more. And I feel like a lot of the stuff from Rebirth also inspired the movies and like the way they decided to touch on his origins in the films. But it's not the best. I mean, it's okay. I still appreciate the John Byrne run way more than Birthright. Yeah.
Well, I didn't read it when it came out, partially because I think they had three Superman origin stories in like 18 months in that time period. and I probably wouldn't have read it anyway because it was an origin story and I know who Superman is. but I didn't read it at the time. But yeah, it did have the reputation for, like you're saying, doing the John Byrne thing again, but bringing in more Silver Age touches, especially about Krypton.
Yeah.
And when I did actually go back and read it years later, I wasn't super impressed with it, but I've thought about rereading it because I've wondered maybe I wasn't in the right headspace for it.
You were jaded, Bob. It's okay. You've had too many Superman origin stories.
But still, I would rather say that you should know Lanil Yu from his work on Superman Birthright or from his work on Indestructible Hulk with Mark Waid than I would be saying that you should know him from his work on Ultimate Hulk versus Ultimate Wolverine.
Nice. Yeah.
So, right. Matt, what's the plot of Ark, the backup story with Art by Yu?
So in Ark, Galactus reveals to Reed there's a Galactus seed buried on Earth and that Franklin is up to something. Bob, I just want to go ahead and add Galactus Seed to the list of extremely powerful the Fantastic Four get their hands on in this issue.
We had Supremer Seed, we have Galactus Seed, it just keeps going, going. The next and final backup is Remember. It's got art by Farrell Dalrymple, who's a pretty fun indie artist. Did you ever read Brandon Graham's Prophet, Matt?
No.
It's a really interesting image series from about 10 years ago that has a lot of artists on it, and Dalrymple is one of them. What happens in the backup story, Remember, Matt?
So Remember, Bob, Franklin and Leech adventure in Franklin's pocket universe and break the fourth wall until Franklin is mentored by a mysterious figure. So,
is the mysterious figure future Franklin, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't make the connection at first until the final issue of this arc, but I don't know who else it would have been. And they did draw, like, there's a white outline shape or whatever, but it still has a beard. So okay, somebody with a beard. What I'm thinking, Bob, is Franklin's got a universe he's playing with, and this would make a fantastic kids Fantastic Four show. Franklin and Leech going on adventures, doing whatever they want in their little universe, like they were playing superhero and learning. You just follow along with them and learn things. I think it'd be great. I could see it on Nickelodeon.
Eventually you might bring in some of the other FF kids. And then you might even bring in like one of the adult Fantastic Four, guest star here, guest star there. And they would teach that episode's lesson. It is like Muppet Babies.
And call it Future Foundation if you have to. Just do it. Just call it Future Foundation. People figure it out. What are you watching, kids? Future Foundation? Oh, that's my favorite. Georgia Public Television. Right after Arthur and Barney.
All right, Matt. So we've got art in this issue by Steve Epting, by Ming Doyle, by Carmine Diagardamincio, by Lineal Yu, by Ferial Dalrymple. Of these, who had your favorite art of the issue?
Bob, I got to give it to you. The visuals of Galactus in this issue are great, especially the visual of him after the birth of the universe and gaining his armor. That was awesome.
Yeah, I liked all the art in this. I mean, it's all very different, but it's all fun. I would either give it to Doyle or you. I really enjoyed both of their stuff on this. So, Matt, moving on to number 601, Forever Part 2. You want to walk us through the plot of that issue?
Johnny brings something from the Negative Zone to defeat the Kree Armada.
Matt, were you surprised that Johnny hates the Future Foundation costumes? He's making fun of Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah, he hates the costumes because he's not on the team. That's all it is. He got
they
replaced.
Hate us because they hate us because they ain't us. Is that what you're saying?
Spider-Man's costume changes all the time, and it doesn't really have anything that shows that he's part of the Fantastic Four.
Matt, were you surprised that Ronan turned against the Supreme Intelligence's plan to destroy Earth?
Okay, Bob, something had to give at some point. That's the thing with these Fantastic Four comics. They just keep building up, and things just keep getting worse, and more bad things are happening all around them. It just doesn't... Something had to give. I was like, okay, they've got this, they've got the... They got all these different characters coming out. It's just... Yeah, they had to... Ronan's like, okay, we can't win here. Let's go. And then... Yeah,
you got to catch a break at some point.
Yeah, and then the Inhumans follow, of course, so that gets rid of them. They can go on. Now you're just stuck with... Yeah. The Negative Zone people.
So in this issue, Matt, the way every member of the FF responded to Johnny being alive was pretty sweet. But I think Reed knowing precisely the number of hours, which is to say 2,757 since Johnny died, actually might be the sweetest in a low-key way.
It was very sweet, Bob. It was sweet of Reed to remember those numbers, like an autistic child.
It was. That's his autistic way of showing love, Matt.
Yes.
And just to run the numbers, so time flows differently in the Negative Zone. Johnny's been in the Negative Zone about 2 years. He's been gone for 2,700 hours. That's about 115 days on Earth. And so if you do the conversions, that means about 6 1/3 days pass in the Negative Zone for every single day on Earth, if that makes sense.
Thank you, Egon.
Here to provide a service. So I do have to say that I was thinking about this, of all the characters in the Marvel Universe, I don't just mean of the Fantastic Four, I mean in the Marvel Universe, Johnny does seem to be about the least likely to ever command a fleet, but yet here he is with his gimp Annihilus commanding a fleet.
I don't know what happens after all this, Bobby, and I haven't read ahead, but should I be suspicious of Johnny? Like, he's been 2 years in the Negative Zone. This isn't a cyborg Superman situation where we're going to find out something's happened to Johnny and he's not himself, because he really didn't act himself as much as I wanted him to. But then they're all like, well, he was gone for 2 years. He's more mature now.
Matt, do you remember that immortal line that DC said in their defense of having Batman not go down on Catwoman?
No, what was it, Bob?
That's not what heroes do. Matt, what you're telling me is that you're looking at Johnny with his gimp, his insect gimp. Yeah. You're like, having an insect gimp, that's not what he really sees.
Yes, Bob. I'm looking at that. I'm looking at the scary shit he has on his arm. The fact that he was put together by worms. There's just a lot. Like, I'm just thinking, something's not going to be right with Johnny.
I will say, Matt, in some sense, this statistic is a little misleading, but we have 3 episodes left of our coverage of Hickman's Fantastic Four run. And so that means there's a lot of stuff to do, Matt. There's a lot of stuff to do in 3. So maybe Johnny goes bad. We can't rule it out, certainly.
I'm just saying. I'm just seeing the everything being coming together. I'm just wondering. That's what we're moving in that direction.
On the subject of somebody who was bad going good, it's so nice to see Maximus the Mad getting along with his brother Black Bolt. That was touching.
Oh, yeah. It was nice. Good job, Mad Maximus.
Maximus the Mad.
Maximus.
Or Mad Max. Actually, you're right. Mad Maximus is pretty funny. Mad Maximus. All right. It's decided. So issue number 602, Forever Part 3. Epting takes a 2-issue break, so we have Barry Kitson, who's been around a lot. I love him for the Three Boot Legion. He's back on art for 602 and 603. Matt, what goes down in 602?
So the Earth is nearly destroyed, and that's before 2 surprises show up, Bob. Not just 1 surprise, yes. 2 surprises.
Yes. Now, Matt, you're on record as hating the Red Hulk, and you're right to do so. All right-thinking people hate the Red Hulk. But did you appreciate the escalation of the fastball special where Red Hulk is throwing She-Hulk?
It was okay, Bob. Let me just throw this out there. This combination of powers thing, I love it. most of the time. But we got to move on past the Fast Plus special. We need to just move on past throwing other people. X-Men 97's doing Bob, where he's got Gambit lighting up Wolverine's claws. That's the cool shit. We need to see more of that stuff. Be more creative with it.
I really want you to read Al Ewing's Sword, because the first volume of that has a very funny discourse about how the Resurrection, the Five, is just the logical extension of the Fastball special.
That, wow. I don't want to read that because it would give me a headache, I'm sure.
It's actually very simple. Okay. It's okay. Funny. I will say something to not make your head hurt, Matt, something to just make you happy, is somehow Spider-Man has wound up walking the gimp, which is to say Annihilus.
Yeah, Annihilus just become a gimp. We're going to have to figure that out. I have this gut feeling that Annihilus is actually in control of stuff, but I'm just now he really is just doing that to put on a show.
Are you saying that Annihilus is topping from the bottom, Matt? Is that what
you're
saying?
Yes, Bob. He is. He's topping from the bottom. He's playing the prisoner.
Speaking of which, Matt, on a scale of 1 to 10, how kinky is it that Sue is using Reed as a blanket in this issue?
I don't know, but I want it to happen to me. I want my wife to have the stretchy powers just so I could use her as a blanket for cuddling. That would just be nice and warm. Think about it. Like, that's a weird fetish, but maybe it's a thing. I don't know. I just want to be wrapped up in someone, literally. It sounds like a serial killer, too, when you say it that way, though. I don't know. Maybe, yeah.
To unite this the insect fetish and the blanket fetish, Matt, there's a short story you should read called Bloodchild.
Okay. Think about it.
Just read Bloodchild, Matt. You'll like it. It's a good story.
All right, Bob.
So Matt, good. Any thoughts on the Celestials?
Yeah, Bob. Thanks to this podcast, I know a great deal about the Celestials. Now I know they're back and they're ready to. They're here to tear things up. You can't destroy them. They're from the dawn of time.
Yeah. To clarify, I guess I should say the two surprises. The first surprise is that Galactus shows up. The second surprise is that the Celestials show up. That brings us into number 603, Forever Part 4. Matt, what goes down in Forever Part 4?
Galactus, Soul's Anvil, and Supercharged Johnny all pale before the Celestials. So, Galactus can actually spar with the Celestials. So this is what I need, Bob. I need a list of the most powerful cosmic beings in the Marvel Universe. Three lists, Bob. I need three lists. Smartest people, most powerful, and I need a list of all those stupid inventions and weapons and crap the Fantastic Four have lying around. What their ranking is as far as power goes.
Well, Matt, what if I told you that there's also a device called the Radical Dodecahedron?
Just add it to the list, Bob. Where does it fit? What can I blow up with that? How many universes can I destroy with it?
Were you surprised that the Celestials formed like Voltron?
It was cheesy, but it was a fun visual. I feel it was unnecessary because the Celestials are so powerful.
Speaking of a fun visual, the Thing or Ben tossing Franklin to Spidey, that was a great bit to get him behind his mom's force bubble. That was a great bit.
It was.
And then I do like the role of Sue here is buying Reed time to think. I thought it was like a good partnership dynamic. Not exactly a Fastball special, but a good dynamic.
Overall, though, the plot's not solved. The problem isn't solved by him, though. All that build-up they did with the Reed's big weapon on all the cities, that didn't do anything. It didn't do squat. Who saves the day, Bob? Who saves the day?
I don't know, Matt. Who saves the day?
Franklin and Valeria, of course.
No, you're right that it is. It is funny that not just our Reed, but no Reed can solve the problem, right?
Right. Well, technically, our Reed did solve the problem. He just didn't know he solved the problem. And by solving the problem, he banged his own wife.
Yeah, exactly. His blanket fetish actually is what solved the problem. Because, and that's the point they make in 604, the last issue. It's that Reed's greatest achievements are his kids, not his mind, which I think is a sweet thing.
Yes, it was very wholesome, Bob. Very, very wholesome.
All right, so 604, Forever, the conclusion, part 5. Matt, what's the plot of Forever, part 5?
So future Franklin's and Val's plots come to fruition.
Yeah. And there's also a very sweet moment where Nathaniel realizes that his scheming has mostly worked because he sees his adult grandkids again. I thought that was sweet.
Yeah, he's all wink, wink. It worked out in the long run. Killing Nathaniels and Reeds, it all worked out in the long run.
Well, Matt, so in this issue, we finally find out why Galactus is so worried about Franklin. Why is that, Matt?
Well, that's because Galactus is the herald of Franklin, apparently.
Yeah. He becomes Franklin's herald, which is a very, very amusing thing.
That's some super strong stuff. Franklin's a big deal. I didn't realize how big of a deal this dude is in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, I was actually thinking of putting that down as my favorite dialogue, but I figured I'd save it for you, but you didn't use it, so we'll just go with, we'll just say it here, the Franklin's line, arise to me, my Galactus. It's a great
arise
line.
To me, my Galactus. Wow. Yeah, it's so insane.
Yeah. So there's a lot undone after this. After this issue, Matt, we still got to see what's up with the Nihilists. We got to see what's up with the Future Foundation kids. We've really got to see what's up with Doom, who's been enslaved by a Reed. But this really does feel like the end of the run. It really wraps up the stories of the Reeds and the War of the Four Cities.
It really does. There's loose ends, like you mentioned. The biggest one to me being the Doctor Doom thing, because I thought that was a big deal in the previous issues, and apparently it's not. It wasn't even mentioned throughout this. I think there's one image.
We see Doom in the background with that Reed a few times, and right. There's a scene where that Reed faces down Christoph, but yeah, you're right. It's really not emphasized.
Yeah, it seemed like that would be a bigger deal, but it wasn't. I'm sure they'll go back to it at some point.
We also still have a lot to do. It wrapped up the War of the Four Cities, but it really more just wraps up the Inhuman side, it would seem, because we still don't know what's going to happen with Annihilus in the Negative Zone, and there's actually not a whole lot about Atlantis or about the Moloid City in this arc, right?
Right. There's a couple of things we got to go back to. How many more volumes are there of Hickman's run?
Three. The Fantastic Four and the FF volumes from this point on take place intertwined. So next week when we read volume 3, which is issues number 12 through 6, that takes place intertwined in this story, if I remember correctly. And then the volume 6 of Fantastic Four and volume 4 of FF also intertwine.
Yeah, that'll be good then. Because I just know something's going on with Johnny. I just know it. And they're going to have to expand on that a little bit. And then Doom's got to play a part. There's a lot left that I think Hickman's going to go with, but he did wrap up the big stuff in this. This could be the end, and they were setting up for a sequel if they got the money.
Well, and it's interesting because in the copies I'm looking at, there's all these Avengers versus X-Men advertisements in them. So this is the period where Bendis's run on Avengers and Gillen's run on X-Men and Fraction's run on, I believe, Iron Man are all coming to a climax, right? And so then they reboot. They don't really reboot, but they reboot the Marvel Universe after Avengers vs. X-Men into Marvel Now, which is their response to
New 52.
In hindsight, we can easily say, and not just in hindsight, at the time too, much better than the New 52.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Bob, so favorite visual for this entire volume?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with issue number 604, the final page before the epilogue, where Sue is crying tears of joy when she sees what Franklin's become, and then Reed and Franklin hug it out. That was, whoa, it all came around.
Sorry, is that Reed and young Franklin or Reed and adult Franklin?
Reed and adult Franklin.
Reed and adult Franklin, okay. I'll go 601, but also Steve Epting. Interesting that we both went with Steve Epting visuals this time. But 601, Ben just throat punches Annihilus. I thought that was great.
Man, Annihilus just likes the pain. My dude's. My favorite dialogue comes in issue number 601, where Reed says, Val must have activated the panic floor to get the class out of harm's way. I'm sure she was just being her normal self. I'm sure no one got left behind. Spider-Man's like, go. I can manage things. Reed says, can you? I'm having to recalculate the necessary ratios every time there's a fluctuation. Spider-Man says, yeah, so maybe best if I go check to make sure no little fish kids got forgotten. There's That's something weird about that back and forth. Because Spider-Man's like, yeah, I'll let you handle those calculations and all that crap, whatever you're doing. In the visual that goes along with it, you can just see there's like hell going on in the background.
Yeah. It is funny, Matt, but is the real reason you picked this just because you don't really think Spider-Man belongs in like the top five intelligences in the Marvel Universe?
That's another good point, Bob. This is the same issue where he was fixing Iron Man's suit. He needs to go check on the fish kids.
I do like Spider-Man being very smart, but I do think that in the crowded spectrum of Marvel Universe intelligence, he probably should be in the top 20, not in the top 10.
I like it when he makes web shooters and cool gadgets. And apparently he can sew pretty well too. Like, that's great. That's fine. I'm good with that. I'm good with all that, Bob. But it's like when he starts making his own ultimate nullifiers.
You went to 604 for your visual, and I went to 601. And then for dialogue, you went to 601, and I'm going to 604. This is rhetoric that goes back to the opening arc of the Hickman run, But he has this, he runs this syllogism about hope, tomorrow, the future. And then the conclusion of the syllogism is just, if we believe in tomorrow, then we believe in forever. Which I think is a really nice thought. It's a good end to the syllogism.
My favorite character is strangely Galactus in this. I don't know why. I thought Galactus was stupid. He's a big bad guy, eats worlds. But this dude's pretty cool. He's actually rather smart. He knows what he's doing. He fights the Celestials, which that was cool. When you're going to have a big epic scale battle like that, one on three, and then them forming the big mecha, it was cool. It was cool. So I'm giving it to Galactus.
Nice, nice. We'll have to... That's not something to do immediately, but we'll have to find some other cool Galactus stories for you to read, because there are some.
All right, Bob, who's your favorite character?
I'll go with Sue. She doesn't have anything super, super dramatic in these issues, but she's always there, being powerful, holding it down in the background. It was a good arc. I like Sue a lot.
I feel like Sue's been either of our favorite characters several times.
Yeah.
Sue's extremely important to the team. She makes these comics way more interesting.
Now, you're so uncomfortable with Namor's attraction for Sue, because we always pick Sue as our character. Matt, what's your favorite issue of the week?
It's cheap, but it's 604, because it just tied everything together. But without all the other issues, it wouldn't have been so great. Hickman's hard. It's hard to always pick a favorite issue with Hickman. But yeah, we always end up picking the final issue, because it takes what we know and puts it all together and makes it make sense.
To Hickman's credit, usually climax issues of big storylines are not traditionally the best in superhero comics. Hickman does a good job of making them really, really sing.
So you're going to hate me for this, but my favorite example of that is Hush.
Oh, God.
Hush is the worst story. I just thought it was the best thing ever. But then now that I look back, I'm like, man, what a horrible story with the worst climax ever.
Yeah, I remember when it was coming out and I was reading your copies and I hated it, but I was trying to be polite because you were very generously letting me read your copies. Next time, folks, we're coming back for Fantastic Four by Hickman, Volume 5.5, or it's the original trade is FF Volume 3. We're covering FF numbers 12 through 16. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Have a great night, everybody.
Thanks for listening.